Michael Knowles goes to University of Wisconsin to stick it to the pro-abortion community. On the way, he not only gets hit on by a dude.
If you ever want to explore your true self, my Instagram is at demigloom, D-E-M-I-G-L-O-O-M.
But he also does a pretty decent job of arguing the case for life.
If you disturb a bald eagle's nest when the eagle is not there, you can be thrown into prison for a year and fined $100,000. You kill a baby, though? The liberals will throw you a party and call you a hero.
Through it all, you'll see that one side of the debate is favored by reason and logic more so than the other. We'll find out which side that is today on IndieThinker. By the way, it's the side of not killing babies. Welcome to the show. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. My name is Reed Huberman, and I have an interesting show prepared for you today. We're going to be talking about Joe Rogan and his conversation with Cat Williams, which I think is pretty fascinating. Cat is an interesting cat. Let's just say that. Before we jump into that, I want to make sure that you know that we have an IndieThinker newsletter that has great IndieThinker extras, but beyond that, also, it will give you an idea of what we're really after here at IndieThinker, which is so much more than a podcast. I hope that what we do here will grow to become one of the biggest Christian conservative media outlets on the planet. And so in effort to create that, we are jumping far beyond podcasts and into full-length feature documentaries. Right now, I'm in the pre-production process of a groundbreaking film called Fatherless. And Fatherless is an attempt to try to expose the breakdown of the nuclear family and who is behind it. Because right now, we are looking at cataclysmic levels of fatherlessness in America. So our documentary, Fatherless, is an attempt to try to figure out where does that come from? Why is that happening? And I think if we can make this film, we can truly make a dent in the breakdown of the nuclear family. But we need your help to do that. You can sign up for a newsletter where you can not only see the full trailer for Fatherless, but you can also find ways to help support the great work that we're doing here at IndieThinker. If you believe that we need great conservative Christian media platforms, well, then I hope that I can create that. And I hope that if you find this channel beneficial, this podcast beneficial to you, you'll think about supporting what we're doing here with your financial gifts. The pro-life movement is perhaps one of the most rational and reasoned positions, especially when you compare it to the pro-death position. You may immediately have an emotional reaction to that framing, but I am not attempting to start off on the wrong foot here. I'm really just trying to be as honest as I possibly can, not hyperbolic. As I look at the two positions of abortion and life, I see one as deeply hypocritical and illogical, and the other as being in line with reason from a naturalistic and religious perspective. Now, both of those are important, but allow me to give you an example.
It is not a person until it is able to have synaptic functions.
When is that, ma'am?
About the 6 month mark.
So what about 5 months and like 3 weeks and 6 days, right before the child turns 6 months old in the womb?
Nobody's aborting a fetus that late unless they have to.
So I've got six abortion facilities on Savannah's phone. We're going to call the abortion facility and I'm going to tell them I'm pregnant with a 32-week fetus, as you say. Let's just prove that late-term abortions happen.
I'm not saying they don't happen.
And there's no legal justification
needed. I'm not saying they don't happen, but they happen to people who don't want them.
I just turned 32 weeks pregnant. Am I able to come in for an abortion, like, ASAP?
I wouldn't be able to see you for the week of the 23rd, so that would put you at 34 weeks.
Can I still have an abortion at 34 weeks?
Yes, ma'am. I just have to do an intake form. Do you have about 5 minutes?
Sure, I have 5 minutes, yeah. That is what abortion is. Abortion
no,
is discriminatory.
No, abortion now. Is health care.
No,
a woman
not.
Can get an abortion for whatever goddamn reason.
If your health care kills people, you're doing it wrong.
This woman started off with a rational argument that life begins at the time of brain activity. But do you see how quick she went from when a baby has brain waves to screaming at the top of her lungs at this woman about reproductive health when she realized that the deck was not stacked in her favor? This is what all conversations on this issue typically end with. If you're from the abortion side, you have to start with a sliver of reason and then reduce yourself to just ad hominem attacking, yelling at Christians, and being mad as a substitute for actually substantive argument. I think you'll find as we look at Michael Knowles' recent speech on the matter that the only rational position is the pro-life position. Let's see if you agree.
If you in any way agitate a bald eagle, if you disturb a bald eagle's nest when the eagle is not there, you can be thrown into prison for a year and fined $100,000 for your first offense. And then it will only get worse subsequently. You kill a baby, though, the liberals will throw you a party and call you a hero. So much for the animals. Next question. Is it okay to kill bad guys? It depends. It seems to me perfectly fine for the government, the civil authority, to kill certain bad guys. That has been the moral and legal tradition in our civilization, and in every civilization, for all of history. The civil authority has care of the community. When someone poses a threat to the community, the civil authority, which does not bear the sword in vain, has always been understood to have the temporal power to enforce its laws. Here, once again, the pro-abortion people disagree. The pro-abortion crowd, the liberals, in recent years have tended to argue against capital punishment. They lobby to get even the very worst criminals, the psychosexual, sadistic serial killers, all of them, off the hook. They seek to abolish the death penalty. So for those keeping score so far when it comes to killing, I, a pro-lifer, am in favor of killing plants and animals and criminals convicted of capital offenses. But I am not in favor of killing innocent little babies. The pro-abortion people tend to favor the opposite.
All right, great. So in just a moment, I'll get to how Christians justify being pro-death penalty and pro-life. But before I do that, I want to kind of step back to the more generalized claim of hypocrisy, because I think the hypocrisy claim is definitely more suited for the pro-abortion side of this debate. You know, Michael already started talking about bald eagle eggs and how we can't violate those, and you got to be a vegan if you're on the left, largely. But when it comes to babies, absolutely throw a party, celebrate the death of those things. So I think hypocrisy here is not on the side of the person who, like myself, says, hey, I'm pro-death penalty. If an individual is a threat to society, you cannot control that individual, they keep on killing people and taking away their right to live, that individual has forfeited his right to live. I think that's an easy proposition to make without saying, on the other hand, because I think that person does have the right to have their life taken from him, an innocent baby doesn't have the right to have their life taken from them. See how those two things are very, very different from each other? Another form of this kind of hypocrisy argument that I often hear is, hey, in this post-Roe world, if you're gonna be pro-life, well then you gotta adopt every single baby that is not gonna be aborted now because these women can't take care of them. So if you're gonna stand up for their life, well then you better be willing to pay, brother. So I happen to fall into a different place as far as this argument is concerned. I actually think it's kind of irrational to say that simply because a baby is inconvenient that you should kill it, or that I can't actually stand up against the killing of an innocent child simply because I don't have the means to adopt every single baby that is now no longer going to be aborted. I think rather that's just absolutely silly, and innocent human beings should be protected because they're innocent human beings. But again, we find ourselves in this situation, right? We have a non-innocent human being who has proven to be a threat to society, and an innocent baby who, even if you don't know how you're going to take care of that child, it is not inconvenient because it is a human life, and there are means by which you can help that small child. Now, let me just throw this in here for the person who is a pro-abortion-minded mom or dad. Let me just tell you that every single week of my life, I help couples find thousands of dollars in resources, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars in resources to help them with health insurance, to help them with food, clothes, diapers, every single thing that you would need to take care of your baby. Because, point of fact, the people who are hypocrites are not pro-lifers. They're on the front lines actually helping these parents take care of their children and sacrificing time with their own personal families, as I do, and money, resources, all of that to try to help people. So there is no hypocrisy on the pro-life side. It rests all on the pro-abortion side that looks for ways to try to justify what they are already doing, rather, regardless of if it's rational or not. Let's go to the next clip.
How about the private killing of bad guys? Not the government, just individuals, you know, vigilantes, private people hunting down their personal enemies. Is that okay? My view, call me crazy, call me traditional, I think that's not okay. Because while it is lawful to kill an evildoer to defend the community, that right belongs to him who has charge of the community's welfare. To borrow an analogy from St. Thomas Aquinas, just as it belongs to the surgeon to cut off the decayed limb of his patient, so too the care of the common good belongs to the persons entrusted with public authority. We don't want randos going around chopping people's limbs off. And likewise, we don't want randos going around killing their perceived enemies. Again, you will not be surprised to find out the liberals disagree. When BLM spent 8 months pillaging and murdering all around the country, the most prominent liberals, some of the most prominent abortion supporters in the country, the current Vice President of the United States, staffers for the current President of the United States, they raised money to bail the criminals out of jail. In recent years, liberals have openly called to defund the police, even to abolish prisons. They've allowed vigilantes to shut down highways. They've encouraged vigilantes to threaten and terrorize Republican elected officials. You might remember a few years ago, Congress Lady Maxine Waters shrieking about how the random Democrats need to go chase down the Republicans in public life and get back on them and push back. And I can't do a good Maxine Waters impression. But Hillary said much the same thing, as did many prominent Democrats. Is it okay to kill a person in self-defense? I think most reasonable people would say yes. Reasonable people, us in this room, but not everybody. If a guy threatens me, and the only way to stop that threat is to kill him, I think I would be justified in doing so. Frankly, my intention would not even necessarily be to kill him. My intention would be to save my own life, the secondary effect of which is to kill the aggressor. Totally justified. The liberals, yet again, say the opposite. The liberals often criticize laws that defend self-defense. The liberals criticize stand your ground laws, for instance. They obviously criticize the Second Amendment. In practice, they deny the right to self-defense. If you are still keeping score, the libs oppose killing animals, murderers, and people who are trying to kill you, but they support killing their private enemies as well as innocent little babies.
Now, with Michael talking about that stuff, I couldn't help but think about Kyle Rittenhouse. And it's a great example because Kyle Rittenhouse, you could argue, maybe was kind of being a vigilante. And I don't know that I would strap a gun on my son and send him out to this crazy place where the police won't do what they're supposed to do and just put him in harm's way. So you might argue that he was kind of being a vigilante and what he was doing by going. But when he finally defended himself and he ended up shooting back, it was in self-defense. So the reason I can support Kyle Rittenhouse is because when he actually ended up killing someone, he did so in self-defense. Now, all that aside, the reason I make that distinction is from a biblical place. And this is where I think the Bible can actually be really super helpful if you allow it into the conversation, because the Bible in the Old Testament makes a distinction between murder and killing. See, you might ask yourself, how can the same God that says thou shalt not kill go around telling his people to kill in the Old Testament? You say, well, isn't that hypocrisy? Well, only if you don't understand that when God says thou shalt not kill, he means thou shalt not murder. You cannot murder anyone in cold blood. This is where what Michael's talking about with vigilantism. You can't go out and, you know, subvert the criminal justice system, take justice into your own hands and become judge, jury, and executioner. Vigilantism is not good. It is not godly. But what you can do is you can kill those people who are threats. You can kill those people who are burning children to Molech and would burn you and your kids to Molech too if they had the opportunity to do so. Now, there's a lot more to say about that, but hopefully you can at least agree with me here that there is a difference between killing and murder. And so this is where I draw this distinction between self-defense and vigilantism. And this is why it's also relevant to the pro-life argument. When you kill somebody, as I believe you should do if they're attacking your family, that is different than an innocent baby who has done nothing to deserve that act of aggression. See, the act of aggression changes the moment the threat is changed. A baby is not a threat. A baby is not a clump of cells that is a parasite feeding off of the host mother. All of these ridiculous, foolish arguments are nothing less than an attempt to try to get your conscience to be okay with the act of abortion. And I think it's very Freudian in this way, that they are trying to throw on top of that baby in the womb a bunch of different euphemisms, a bunch of different idiomatic expressions, my life, my body, my choice, all that kind of stuff to hide the fact of what they're actually doing. The fact that you would even call abortion reproductive rights. Now that is such a dishonest thing. How is it reproductive rights to kill the thing you are reproducing? All of that is, it's just one mega cope. And that's all I'm saying, is that if you can't see the distinction between an innocent human life and a person that you're having to defend yourself from and are willing to kill in the process, then what you're doing is you are trying to get away with murder rather than to truly be honest. All right, let's go to one last clip.
Hi, Michael. Do you believe that organ donation should be mandatory?
I do not.
You do not. Okay, so if you believe that even a dead person has the right to bodily autonomy, even if that dead person's organs could save up to 8 lives, and yet you also believe that women should be legally mandated to sacrifice their bodily autonomy in order to save the life of a fetus, by your own logic, a corpse has more right to bodily autonomy than a living, breathing woman.
Well, you imposed upon me a liberal view that I do not hold, which is that my views of abortion come from some sense of bodily autonomy. I'm not a huge autonomy guy to begin with. I don't think that I own my body. I think my body is sort of a gift, you know, and I have obligations to my creator. The reason that I don't support mandatory organ donation is not because of some liberal conception of autonomy or something. It's because that's not what your organs are for. Your organs are for you. Your lungs are to bring oxygen to your blood. Your heart is to pump blood around your body. Your liver is to take care of what I will probably do later on at the bar after this speech, and so on and so forth. My organs are not for you. Your organs are not for me. So you can give an organ donation, that can be a lovely thing to do, but you aren't obligated for it because things are known largely by what they are for.
Okay. It sounded like you were just going to be anti-organ donation for a second. I was like, that's weird.
No. But I am against, going in and stealing people's organs. I think that would be quite wrong.
Stealing from a person who isn't alive, which gives
just,
them more
Well, yeah,
more
I think
right,
desecrating bodies is pretty bad,
right,
you know,
or
like digging up graves is bad too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you don't believe that withholding resources like life-saving organs, which you would die without if you have organ failure, if you don't believe that withholding resources like that means that you're killing a person, would you be pro cutting the umbilical cord rather than removing a fetus so that the fetus would no longer be able to grow without the nutrients it needs?
I think it would be wrong for a mother to kill her child. So I don't view my organs, say, as resources, as you've put it in a kind of like materialist liberal way. I kind of think of them as my organs, you know, and I think of my body as like my body, and I think of me as a person, not just a big sack of flesh that can be chopped up for the pleasure of some liberal technocrat. Call me old-fashioned, I guess.
Yeah, so this is very important. What Michael's arguing here is kind of a purposed argument or a causation argument from natural law, where he's essentially trying to show this young lady that she's making a false equivalency argument. So she's using organ donorship and abortion as synonymous with each other. So can you take organs from a person who is dead? And do they lose their bodily autonomy when that happens? Well, the problem with that is that a baby is not an organ. A baby is a human being, and that baby has organs, but that baby is not an organ. You are not the sum total of a part of who you are. You are much more than that. And so this is an incredibly reductionistic way of looking at human beings. But honestly, you can expect that from somebody who's an abortionist, because they're going to have to reduce human life in order to justify killing it. I mean, this is what the whole fetus thing is all about. We call it a fetus rather than a baby so we can justify killing it. Now, also, I think it's interesting, too, that she's making this argument, because essentially she's making the violinist argument. Judith Jarvis Thompson came up with this analogy. It's called the violinist defense of abortion, and it's a bodily autonomy argument. And essentially, she says this: if you woke up one day and you were connected to classical, a maestro, the greatest violinist in the history of the world, and you were connected to this guy, like by your livers or something like that, or maybe blood transfusion, who knows? He needs your blood to survive. Would you argue that you have the right to disconnect this guy, regardless of how great of a virtuoso he is, because you have the right not to be connected to this individual? Or would you argue that we need to create laws that make that woman, who is like the only possible organ donor, the only blood type match for this guy, that person should be legally forced to keep this violinist alive? And so the idea is that obviously the mother of a baby is being forced to keep that baby alive if abortion is not possible. But there's a couple of things wrong with that argument. First and foremost, it's this: the woman didn't choose to be connected to that man. And when a woman has a baby, she chose to do what is necessary to have that baby. Now, she may not have wanted a baby, but she knew going in that the act of sex does tend to end in the reproduction of human life. Moreover, that woman doesn't have a personal responsibility to that violinist because he's a complete stranger. It doesn't matter that he's a virtuoso. The baby in that woman's body is her baby. That's not her violinist. So you see that this argument breaks down immediately upon the first level of kind of investigation. And perhaps most importantly of all, a baby is not a sickness. That guy who's sick and we must keep him alive is in no way equivalent to a baby who is a purposeful, meaningful human being with intrinsic value. A baby is not a sickness, and it never will be. This is the kind of cope that often happens with those on the pro-abortion side. Let me show you this in real time, because a community note or whatever it's called on YouTube was added to this video because it's speaking about abortion. So look at this picture on the screen. Essentially, here's the picture of Michael Knowles' speech and then the community note at the bottom, and it says abortion is a procedure to end a pregnancy. It can be done two different ways, and then it will go on. I noticed that they forgot something there. An abortion is a procedure to end a pregnancy. Well, it's also to end the life of a baby. Convenient how they forgot that. Why would they leave that part out, you might ask? I'll tell you why. Because all of this is a big cope. Deep down, abortionists know, outside of life of the mother, there is no rational basis for abortion. And I can even tell you why that's not even a rational basis, because scientifically speaking, there is no reason to ever perform an abortion to save the life of a mother. But before I even introduce scientific evidence or faith-based arguments, which are one and the same, by the way, if you care about evidentiary Christianity as I do, I can show you life begins at conception. But before I even do any of that, you can already know abortion is wrong, just simply from common sense. Here's my argument. And basically every pro-life argument at the end of the day. Notice that we don't often go around shoving Bible verses in people's faces, although what would be the real problem with that? But notice that what I'm about to tell you doesn't necessarily depend upon a religious understanding. One, ending the life of an innocent human being is always wrong. Two, abortion ends the life of an innocent human being. Therefore, three, abortion is always wrong. So in other words, abortion laws violate all reason, and rational people should reject them outright. There's never a reason to kill a baby, and it is never permissible, no matter how much flowery language you try to put on top of it. There has never been a good pro-abortion argument. And if you're a good person, you'll pursue good and reject evil. And that means that you need to follow common sense where it leads you, and follow the evidence where it leads you, to be intellectually honest. And if you do that on this subject, you will inevitably end on the side of life. Thanks so much for watching. If this video was helpful to you, don't forget to comment down below. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and go with God.